the first question. You said, life and existence have no goal. They are a purpose unto themselves. Other masters, for instance, Sri Aurobindo, teach evolution as the aim of the world. Evolution in always reaching for still higher levels of consciousness, from the kingdom of minerals to the kingdom of vegetables, animal, man, from present man to enlightened man. Are these teachings wrong, or is there a bridge to purposelessness? Sri Aurobindo is a great philosopher, but not a master at all. Very intelligent, very scholarly, a great intellectual, but not an enlightened master. He talks about God and talks beautifully, but it is all talk. It is all abstraction. It is not a realization. If it is a realization, then there can't be any goal. For example, if the world has evolution as the goal, then what will be the goal of evolution? Why evolution at all? Why in the first place? You will have to create another abstraction, and it will be a regress ad infinitum. Whatsoever you fix as the goal, the question will remain relevant about that. Why? If this is the goal of evolution, to realize God, then what is the goal of realizing God? Just ask that question, and you are back to the same place. If enlightenment is the goal of life, then what is the goal of enlightenment? And then you can see the point. Enlightenment will have no purpose. And if the ultimate itself has no purpose, then what is the point of saying that life has purpose and the world has purpose? If the ultimate is purposelessness, then that ultimate permeates all. This goal orientation comes from the ego. The ego cannot accept that there is no goal. The ego cannot accept that there is no hierarchy. The ego cannot accept that minerals and trees and animals and men and enlightened people all exist in a great simultaneity. There is no gradation. You would like to be higher. You would like to be somebody special. You are man, not a mineral. But what is so great in being a man? What is so great in being an animal or a man or an enlightened man? Why create the hierarchy? And finally, the whole thing falls flat. Then in the end, God has no purpose. And God is all. Those who have experienced, those who have been not just thinking about God, but those who have experienced, will say God is nothing but the cosmic simultaneity of all. Minerals are exactly where man is, in their own way, in a different form. Trees are exactly where enlightened people are, in their own way, in their own form. Nobody is higher and nobody is lower. The ego cannot accept that, because if there is nobody higher, nobody lower, the ego can't exist at all. It can exist only through comparison. It has to put somebody lower and it has to put somebody higher. It can exist only in the middle of these two falsities. It has to put somebody lower so it can feel good that I am special, and then it has to put somebody higher so it can go on striving, so that it can go on achieving, so that it can go on ladder climbing. But if the ultimate has no purpose, what purpose is there in enlightenment? Buddha is purposeless. Just think of it. And you are purposeful. God is purposeless. And you are purposeful. If God is purposeless, you are purposeless. Because you are not separate from God. Who is existing in the trees? Who is treeing in the trees? Who is hidden in the rocks? Who is singing in the birds? Who is speaking in me and who is listening in you? It is all one. The speaker and the spoken are one. The knower and the known are one. The lover and the beloved are one. Once this becomes comprehensible to you, you relax. You relax in the cosmic simultaneity. That's what I mean when I say, be natural. Ego brings unnatural desires in you. It drives you crazy. Life is simple. But to be simple, one has to be purposeless. Any goal, and you can't be simple. Any goal, and you can't be here now. Any goal, and the desire will rock you. Any goal and you are on the way, again moving. You cannot enjoy this moment, the grace of this moment, the benediction of here now. Once you understand this, all goals disappear, and with all those goals you disappear. Then what is left is enlightenment. To know that there is no purpose is to become enlightened. To know that all is good as it is. And we all are participating into the same reality. Nobody is higher and nobody is lower. There is no comparison needed. Which is higher? Ice is higher or water? Vapor is higher or ice? We know that there is nobody higher or lower. Ice, water, vapor are all manifestations of one reality called H2O. H2O has these three forms. God has these millions of forms. Man, woman. Beautiful, ugly. Stupid, intelligent. Sinner, saint. Nobody is higher, nobody is lower. To see it is to be transformed. From that very moment you start disappearing, you start melting. People like Sri Aurobindo will give you a new kind of ego, a spiritual kind, You start striving for supramental states, supraconscious states, and you are again in the same rut. The race has started again. First it was for money, power, prestige, now it is for supramental states. And all that comes as is said to it will be there. Then there will be competition. Then somebody is going higher than you. Then you are lagging behind. Or you are going higher than somebody else. And everybody has to prove that he is higher. And he has to continuously fight those who are competing. Then the whole nonsense has entered again. Then you are in a marketplace again, in a spiritual marketplace, of course. But what is the difference? In the ordinary marketplace, somebody was richer than you. Now somebody has more satori quality in him. Now somebody is more meditative. Now somebody is more enlightened. If there is a goal, then even enlightenment will be in degrees more or less. If there is no goal, you can become enlightened this very moment. You are. Just you need the courage to recognize it. The courage to be it. It hurts because the ego will have to be left. And all that you have tried in your life has been because of the ego. You may be even meditating because of the ego and for the ego. You want to have that attitude of holier than thou. So you can condemn the whole world. And you can see that I am a spiritual person. You all are materialists. You can go in India and you can see. Every Indian thinks that the whole world is materialist except the Indians. Holier than thou. And then people have to invent ways so they can prove that they are holier than thou. They will eat this and they will not eat that. They will live according to a certain pattern. They will have a certain style. All these are mind games. Beware of people like Sri Aurobindo. My approach is not that of evolution. Nothing is going anywhere. All is here. Things are changing certainly, but there is no evolution. Things are moving certainly, but nothing is going higher and nothing is left behind as lower. Drop those categories. And dropping them, you will be immediately entering into a new world. Suddenly you will find friendship with trees, because they are no more lower. Suddenly you will find a great affinity with birds, because they are no more lower. Suddenly you will look into the eyes of your dog, and you will find a Buddha there too. Then the sheer joy of it is infinite. You will look into the eyes of your woman, and a Buddha is hiding there too. I make all things divine. I don't want you to go to God. I bring God to you. And not only to you, I bring God to the whole existence. It is really there. There is no other reality. This is the only reality there is. This is the only dance there is. Don't miss this dance. Don't get obsessed with ideals. Otherwise, you will be losing an opportunity. Satbodhi asks, you said life and existence have no goal. They are a purpose unto themselves. Yes, it is so. It is not a philosophical statement. I am simply sharing my experience. I am not saying anything which I have not seen, felt, lived. I am simply opening my heart to you. It is so. It is not an argument. I am not trying to convince you for anything at all. I am simply making it clear to you what has happened to me. And I say to you, this is available to you too. And this very moment, not a single moment's postponement is needed, because enlightenment is a state of nature. Relax. Don't be tense about goals, because all goals make tension, create tension, stress, strain. Because you have to look always ahead. You have to look far away. You have to think of future things. You have to plan for them. And you have to strive. Naturally, tension arises. Anxiety arises. Anguish arises. You are torn apart. Your reality is here and your heart is somewhere else. You become schizophrenic. When I say relax, I mean drop all goals, drop all ideas. Relax into this moment. Listen to this moment. Live this moment. Have a taste of it. Be surrounded by the reality that is already here. And suddenly you will also have the same taste I am talking about. It is an experience, existential. It is not speculation. You say other masters, for instance, Sri Aurobindo, teach evolution as the aim of the world. I don't teach you anything as the aim of the world. I teach you only life, love, joy. I don't want you to become obsessed with future. Now is my teaching, if it can be called a teaching. Rather than calling it a teaching, I would like to call it a sharing. I'm not a teacher in that sense. I'm not giving you a doctrine so that you can adapt yourself to the doctrine and you can become a follower. I want you to become me, not a follower. But you are so miserly, not only in giving, even in taking you are so miserly. To hide that miserliness, you philosophize in so many ways. These are strategies. You are afraid to relax. So first you were tense for money, for a better house, for a better job, for a more beautiful woman. Now you are tense for evolution. How to become enlightened? How to become a Buddha? You need a good kick in the pants. That's exactly what happened. A great seeker, a philosopher, a thinker came to Matasu. Matasu is one of the rare Zen masters. And the philosopher asked, he was a professor in a university. He asked, how to become enlightened? How to become a Buddha? Matasu said, he was sitting in the temple, just by the side of a great Buddha statue. He said, to talk about such solemn and serious things, let us start by the right approach. You first bow down to Buddha. It looked so right that to talk about Buddhahood, to talk about enlightenment, and Matasu said with great seriousness, you bow down to Buddha. So the philosopher bowed down. And Matasu gave him a good kick, a terrific kick in the pants. And something happened. Not only that you are laughing, the philosopher started laughing, seeing the whole ridiculousness of it. His first satori. He had some taste of Buddhahood in that moment. What really happened, he was not expecting such a kick with such a great man, such enlightened sage. You never expect such things. It was such a shock. For a moment, his thinking stopped. For a moment, he could not think at all. This was so unexpected. In that very moment, bowing down to the statue of Buddha and Matasu kicking him, so unexpectedly, it was like an electric shock. It must have gone to the deepest core of his mind. For a moment, all thinking stops, all time stops. And he is looking at Buddha's statue. In that very moment, that meditative moment, he started laughing. And years later on, he was again and again saying to people, people will ask him, what happened to you? Because you have never been the same man again. And he will say, something strange happened. The day Matasu kicked me, I have not stopped laughing since then. Whenever I bow down to Buddha again, I again remember Matasu, and the kick is again there. For a moment, my thinking stops, and I can see what this man means. He taught me without using a single word. That's exactly what you need. A kick in the pants, a terrific kick. You are Buddhas, simply forgotten. You need only a remembrance, no evolution. It is not that you have to become a Buddha. You are a Buddha, fallen asleep. Somebody needs to kick you. Somebody needs to shout at you. Somebody needs to hit you. And that is the purpose of a master. Matasu is a master. Sri Aurobindo is not a master. Sri Aurobindo is just philosophizing, giving a consolation to people. Many people came to him. Thousands became interested in him. Because it is so cheap to become interested in philosophy. Nothing is lost. Nothing is at stake. And you learn beautiful words. And you start dreaming about things. And somebody systematizes the whole thing. He was a great systematizer. He labels things, categorizes them. He goes with such a system that he has a great appeal for the logical mind, for the modern mind. But just because he has the appeal, that simply shows that he suits with the modern mind. And anything that suits with the modern mind is not going to change it. You need somebody who can possess you unexpectedly, who can shatter your ideas, who can shatter you, who can take the very earth beneath your feet. Only very courageous people become interested in a master. To be with a master is dangerous. One never knows what he is going to do. One never knows what he is going to say. He himself does not know. things are happening. He is in tune with the whole. So whatsoever happens, happens. Remember, Matasu has not kicked this man. If Matasu had kicked this man, there would have been nothing. Maybe a fight. God has kicked through Matasu. Matasu functioned only as a hollow bamboo. The ways of a sage are strange, illogical, paradoxical. Sri Aurobindo can't be a sage. He is so systematic, so logical. His very logicalness is enough of a proof that he knows nothing. He is clever with words. A genius with words. I don't think anybody else in this century was so capable with words, with such talents of logic, scholarship, reading, research. But behind that all jargon, there is nothing. Another man was alive in Sri Aurobindo's days, Raman Maharishi. He had the experience. Very few people went to him. Very few. But those who went were benefited. But to seize Maharishi Raman needs a totally different kind of approach. He will not speak much. He will not try to convince you. He will be sitting there. If you are available, he is available. And his ways will be very simple. Unless you have a heart to feel that vibe, you will miss him. It is not always so. Jai Krishnamurti is there. He talks. Talks very intelligently. Remember, I will not say logically. Talks very intelligently. Goes into the analysis of any problem as deeply as it is humanly possible. But he is not a philosopher either. All his talk is just like uprooting weeds from the garden. He destroys your problems through his analysis. He does not give you anything, he simply takes away all that you have been carrying in your mind. For a moment you are utterly lost, and in that very moment you can see his reality, his experience, it starts flowing in you. People can miss him also. People used to miss Sri Raman because he was silent. He will not say much. Just the other day I had mentioned U.G. Krishnamurti. When he saw Maharishi Raman reading joke books and looking at cartoons, he was very much frustrated. Not only that, a man asked a question about God, and U.G. Krishnamurti was present there, and a man asked very seriously, bowing into his feet, ask about God. And what Sri Raman, did you know? He gave him a joke book and said, read it. Naturally, U.G. Krishnamurti was very much offended. Is this a way? This seems to be disrespectful to the man who has asked such a serious question to give him a joke book. This is again a kick in the pants in its own way. What he is saying, that what nonsense you are talking about, God. It is not a thing to be talked about. Better read a joke book and have a good laughter. If you can laugh, maybe you can know God. Not by what I will say, but if you can laugh, a hearty laugh, a belly laugh, in that moment thinking stops. Now he has given a great message without saying a single word. Have you not watched it? When you laugh, you are off mind. For a moment, you are no more in the mind. Laughter takes you somewhere else. Where it takes? It takes to the same place where meditation takes. So if you see a very serious and sad man, and he claims that he is meditating, know well, he is not meditating. Meditation is always dancing. It is never serious, sad. It is sincere, of course, but never sad. It is joyous. It is gay. You must have heard the old proverb, laugh and the whole world laughs with you. Weep and you weep alone. They have changed this proverb a little bit in the modern times. Now they say, laugh and the whole world laughs with you. Weep and you sleep alone. But it is the same. In the moment of laughter, suddenly you are one with the harmony of existence. Weep, you have fallen apart. You are no more part of it. In sadness, in seriousness, in despair, you are not in rhythm with existence. In laughing, in dancing, in singing, in loving, you are in rhythm with existence. There is no evolution, only rhythm or no rhythm. These are two states, and they are available right now. You can be in rhythm, you can be not in rhythm. That is the freedom of man. Trees are continuously in rhythm. Birds are continuously in rhythm. Men can choose. These are different manifestations. Because you can choose, you have chosen the wrong. And the wrong has an appeal. Because by choosing the wrong, you become important. By choosing the right, you disappear. And you have been taught from the very childhood to be important, to be the first in the world. You have been taught ambition. You have been poisoned to the very core. So always you want to be important. Now this Yuji Krishnamurti missed Sri Raman. And something great was happening. Almost like Buddha giving his flower to Mahakashyapa. Ramakrishna giving a joke book to a man who is asking about God, or Matasu giving a terrific kick in the pants. Yuji Krishnamurti missed Raman. Then he missed J. Krishnamurti too. He lived for years with J. Krishnamurti. Now J. Krishnamurti is totally different in his expression, very logical, very rational, the beginning of his work is always with the mind. Then slowly he leads you beyond the mind. But there Yuji Krishnamurti thought it is all abstraction philosophy. He stopped going there because it is all abstraction. He left Sri Raman because there was no philosophy. He left Krishnamurti because there was too much philosophy. In both the cases he missed, and he lived with Sri Shivananda for Rishikesh for 3 years doing yoga postures. There for 3 years he thought something is here. And there was nothing. Shivananda is a very ordinary teacher. You can find dozens of them all around this country, teaching people how to stand on your heads, teaching people stupid things. There he remained for 3 years, became a disciple. Now missed two pinnacles. And this is what goes on happening. You have a mind, a certain mind. When you go to a master, you look from your mind. If it fits, you are happy. You start clinging. But that is not going to help. Because it fits, it will strengthen the same mind that you had brought with you. If you come across by chance a real master, nothing is going to fit. He is going to disrupt all your ideas about how a master should be. He is going to sabotage you. He is going to take all expectations. He is to frustrate you. He is to disappoint you in every possible way. Because that is the only work, real work, can start. And if you still can be with him, then you are going to be awakened. Sleep is easy, cheap. Awakening is arduous. You will have to renounce your dreams. And you will have to renounce much comfort, much convenience. You will have to renounce many ideas that you have always thought very valuable. My approach is that there is no evolution happening. The world is exactly where it always has been and will remain there. And I don't mean that things are not changing. Bullock carts have disappeared and cars have come. And cars is on the way to disappear sooner or later. Some private flying machines will be soon around. Many things have changed, but really nothing has changed. At the core, everything is exactly the same. Do you think? If you become enlightened today, you will be more enlightened than Buddha, because 25 centuries have passed and man has evolved. Do you think the people who were in Buddha's days, they were more unenlightened than you are? Or still go further back, Moses? Or still more further back, Krishna? Do you think in the days of Krishna 5,000 years before there was less enlightened people, more unenlightened people than they are today? It is exactly the same. Time makes no difference. When you become enlightened, on what date will not be a decisive factor. When you become enlightened, you become enlightened. You simply become aware. You are no more asleep. You remember, you recognize your reality, and you are in tune. Cars may be passing by, are bullock cars. Do you think it makes any difference? Had Buddha been more enlightened if cars were passing by in Bodh Gaya and trains were shrieking and aeroplanes were rushing from one airport to another? What happened to Buddha in Bodh Gaya 25 centuries before would have been the same. Bullock carts, our cars, our aeroplanes, our spaceships makes no difference. And the people who were unenlightened were as unenlightened as the people are today. At that depth, nothing ever changes. There is no evolution. Otherwise, Buddha will have to come back to become more enlightened this time. And then there is no end. Then every time you become enlightened, after a few centuries, you have to come back and become enlightened more, because now more sophisticated enlightenment is available. At the deepest core, nothing is changing. On the periphery, things change. Other masters, for instance, Sri Aurobindo, teach evolution as the aim of the world. These people appeal because you want some longing, ambition, desire. You want some passion, and these people supply you. Whatsoever is demanded is supplied. Because you want something to cling to, they give you spiritual commodities. You can't remain without desires. So you say, now I am no more interested in the world. They give you otherworldly desires. They say, okay, take this. Now worry about this. You have worried enough about the world. Now worry about meditation. Now worry about enlightenment. You have competed enough to reach to Delhi. Now forget about Delhi. Reach moksha, nirvana, paradise. But go on reaching. And you feel very happy. A new toy has been given to you. And you start playing with the new toy. Sooner or later you get fed up with that toy. Then some other toy has to be given to you. Just the other day, somebody had written a letter to me. In Germany, somebody has invented a new kind, far more superior than enlightenment. It is called transformation. Now, you have played with the word enlightenment too long. Now, somebody is bound to come to say that that is nothing. Take transformation. Enlightenment is simply enlightenment. We transform. We take you to another, a new formation. Enlightenment means you remain the same and light comes to you. Transformation means you become totally new. Now this appeals, a new toy. Then somebody will come and will give some another word. People go on playing with words. Beware. I really want to do work here. I don't want to give you any more toys. I want to destroy all toys. It is going to be hard work. It is going to be painful. But if you can move with me just one step, I ask only one step. Your dreams, your sleep would have gone forever. And then real life starts. Real life is with the whole. Unreal life is alone. Are these teachings wrong? Satbodhi has asked. They are not. right or wrong. They are simply illusory. I cannot call them wrong even. They are not right. They are not wrong. They are simply illusory. They have nothing to do with truth. They have something to do with your mind. Your mind demands those things. Somebody comes and supplies you. It is a con game. The second question, does anything or anyone need correction? It puzzles me. Nobody needs correction. And who is going to correct? The moment it is said that somebody needs correction, sooner or later, somebody is needed to dominate you, to manipulate you, to make a slave out of you. That's why leaders down the ages have been calling and shouting from housetops. Everything needs to be corrected. Everything needs to be changed, improved. If nothing is needed to be corrected, they won't be leaders anymore. They live on the idea that things need to be improved. Revolutions have to be done. Then they are great leaders. And nothing is ever improved. Nothing can ever be improved. You can either be fast asleep or awake. And awakening is not a correction, remember. It is not correcting your sleep. If sleep is corrected, that will mean a little more tranquilizers are injected in you so that you can sleep better. That is correction. New pillows, more comfortable. New beds, more convenient. A better bedroom. These are corrections. So you can remain asleep in a better way. So you can almost remain in a coma. Sleep does not need correction. Awakening is not a correction in sleep. It is simply dropping sleep. It is moving into another kind of reality. Having a totally different kind of relationship with existence. Moralists, politicians, Puritans, priests, they are always after you, calling for correction. Everything is needed to be corrected. Every person is needed to be corrected. That is their power. The world is dominated by politicians because of it. They always go on finding what has to be corrected. And they always go on deluding you that now the correction can be done. But there is only one way. If they are in power, then the correction can be done. First, they convince you that the correction is needed. Then naturally, when you become convinced the correction is needed. And why you become convinced? Because you are suffering. Suffering because of sleep, not because of immorality. Suffering not because of sin, but because you are unconscious. And they come and they say, this is why you are suffering. A better morality, a better code of conduct, a better behavior, a better character, and your suffering will disappear. And you start correcting yourself. And you cannot correct. You need help. You need a priest, a guide to guide you. You need a leader. First they convince you correction is needed, and then naturally they come by the back door with all paraphernalia to correct you. You become slaves. That has been the trick down the ages. People have been dominated. People have been reduced into things. People have been condemned. People have been praised. But all the same, they have been dominated through condemnation, through praise. This is the great conspiracy. I would like to tell you once for all, there is no need for any correction. You are not to be improved upon. Then what is needed? Awakening is needed, not correction. Not better morality. Not better ethical conduct. No. Just consciousness. And with consciousness, morality comes on its own accord. In deep sleep, unconscious, how can you correct yourself? At the most, you can have little better dreams. Maybe not in black and white. Technicolor dreams. Psychedelic dreams. But you can have only better dreams in sleep. You cannot have reality in sleep. I have heard. It was dark, cloudy night, and the drunk staggered into the cemetery and fell into a hole which had been dug in preparation for a burial the following day. The drunk hiccuped and fell asleep. Half an hour later, another drunk swayed into the cemetery. He was singing loudly, and his raucous voice woke up the drunk in the grave, who suddenly started to yell that he was cold. The singing drunk tottered to the edge of the grave and peered blurrily down at the complaining drunk. "It is no wonder you are cold," he shouted down to the drunk. "You have kicked all the soil off yourself." This is what has been going on. You are asleep, your leaders are asleep. You are asleep, your priests are asleep. The problem is not that the man has kicked all the soil off himself. And if this another drunk starts helping, what do you think he will do? He will throw the soil again? No wonder he is feeling cold. You need only one thing. And corrections are a million. And still never suffice. You put one thing right on this corner and something else goes wrong on another. Because your sleep keeps a certain balance. Have you not watched? You stop smoking and then you start chewing gum. You stop one thing and you have to start another. And it is the same old game. You go on changing only things. You remain the same. Corrections are millions. There is no end to them. You can go on correcting and correcting, and you will never be correct. You will never be right. You can put all the wrongs right, and you will find yourself still wrong. Because deep down, you are still unconscious. You don't know who you are. The first and the only step is to know who you are, is to become aware. Timothy was on holiday in Ireland and is staying at a small country inn. One evening in the bar, he was amazed by the following conversation. "That's a beautiful hat you have got there," said an old man to a young fellow who was standing next to him at the bar, "Where did you buy it?" "At O'Grady's," replied the young man. "Why, I go there myself," commented the old man. "You must be from around these parts, then?" "I from Murphy Street." "Gracious!" exclaimed the old man. "I live there too." "Quite amazing," commented Timothy to the barman, "that those two folk over there live in the same street and have only just met." "Don't you believe it," said the barman. "They are actually father and son, but they are always too drunk to recognize each other." No correction is needed. Just awareness is needed. Become more alert. No character is needed. Because all character is false if you are not conscious. And all character is a bondage if you are not conscious. And all character is nothing but chains. It doesn't bring freedom. All morality is hypocrisy if you are not aware, if you are not conscious. So to me, religion means only one thing: to be more conscious, to live more consciously. Does anything or anyone need correction? It puzzles me. It has puzzled everybody down the ages. Forget about correction. Put your total energy into awakening. There are only two ways to be: unconscious or conscious. Choose. The third question: enlightenment is my true nature. There is no need to do anything. Only when effort is completely exhausted and one feels utterly useless does grace come. What is all this? I am confused. What should I do? Should I continue with meditation or should I just sit and let things happen? Please guide me. If you are confused, then you will have to continue meditations. Confusion is the illness. Meditation is medicinal. Both the words meditation and medicine come from the same root. If you are confused, you will have to go on meditating. When you see the point without any confusion, then there is no need. But meditation will prepare. Meditation will force you to see the point that there is no need to do anything. Only meditation can do that. Listening just to me, I have told you that to be natural is to be enlightened. Now you think so. That is great. I can sit silently and do nothing. But can you really sit silently and do nothing? If you can really sit silently and do nothing, then this question would not have arisen. You would have sat and known. And you would have bowed me before me and thanked me. There would have been no question. You would have come dancing to me, not with a question and a confused mind. If you can sit silently doing nothing, what else is needed? That's what Buddha was doing under the Bodhi tree, sitting silently doing nothing. And then it happened. That's how it happened to me. That's how it always happens. But not to do is not so easy. Because you have become so accustomed of doing something or other. Even sitting will be a doing to you. You will have to force yourself in a yoga posture and you will sit strained, still in control, holding. trying to sit silently and not to do anything, and boiling within to do thousand and one things, and thousands thoughts will clamor around, will distract you. Can you just sit and do nothing? That is the ultimate. That's what nirvana is, samadhi is. It can happen just listening to me also, it can happen, but great intelligence is needed then. Then simply you have seen the point that to be natural is all. Then where is the confusion? From where it can come? Then what is the confusion? You have seen it, or you have not seen it. If you have seen it, all confusion has disappeared. And you will sit silently. You will walk silently. You will eat silently. You will talk silently. You will become a non-doer. You will become a natural being. But if you have not seen it, then you will need few more crazy things. You will have to go through them. Those meditations will force you to see the point. Either you see just by listening and sitting by my side, or you will have to see the hard way. Buddha meditated for 6 years. And meditated intensely, totally. Then this realization arose in him that what I am doing, trees are perfectly happy, birds are perfectly happy. What I am doing, and these trees are not meditating. And these birds have never thought about meditation, and they have not read Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. And they don't do yogasanas, and they don't chant any mantras, and the whole existence is so tremendously ecstatic. What I am doing, standing on my head and fasting and all that nonsense. He saw it, but 6 years it took for him to see this. And he was no ordinary man. He was tremendously intelligent. It took 6 years for him to see the point. But the moment he saw it, he relaxed under the Bodhi tree. He fell asleep. And the next morning he was awakened. Not only physically, he opened his eyes. Spiritually, his eyes were opened. Next morning when he opened his eyes, he was totally a different man. The real man had arisen. And just a glimpse of the real man, says Ikku, and you are in love. And the moment he saw his real man, he started living a life of compassion and love. There was no other way now, no choice. He became a natural man. If you feel confused, then go on meditating. Meditation is not for enlightenment. Meditation is for confused people. Meditation does not lead you to enlightenment. It simply makes you fed up with your confusion. Just see the point. Meditation is not a way to enlightenment. It is just a way to get rid of confusion. And when there is no confusion, enlightenment comes on its own accord. Meditation's work is negative. It takes things away from you. It does not give you anything. It simply goes on taking things away from you. Anger disappears, greed disappears, desire disappears, and you start losing whatsoever you had. You become every day poorer and poorer. That's what Jesus means when he says, blessed are those who are poor in spirit. Anger is not there. Greed is not there. Ambition is not there. Slowly, slowly, chunks of your being are cut from you. And one day suddenly nothing is there. our only nothing is there. That very moment light penetrates. All those things, greed, anger, passion, lust, hatred, ambition, ego, they were hindering the path. They were not allowing the light to penetrate in you. They were functioning like a rock between you and God. All those removed. Suddenly God enters in you and you enter in God. If you understand me, there is no need for any meditation. But if you don't understand me, to understand me, meditation will be needed. Then go on doing it. I understand your confusion, your trouble. You can do it only if it leads to enlightenment. That's what is your problem. You have not said it so clearly. But that's exactly where is the problem. You can do it if I emphasize that it will lead you to enlightenment. That I cannot do. Because that is not true. You want me to promise you so that you can go on doing meditation. You want me to hypnotize you. You want me to go on supporting your desires, your goals, that you want to become enlightened, that you want to become natural. Now look at the whole absurdity of becoming natural. How can one become natural? Natural you are. All becoming will lead you towards unnatural structures. Becoming cannot bring you to be natural. Becoming means becoming unnatural. Natural you are. But you want me to support you because you cannot sit silently. You cannot sit really. You need something to think about, to do about. You want some goal. And if I take the goal away, then you ask, then why should I do meditation if it's not needed? It is still needed. Needed not for enlightenment. Needed just to destroy this constant restlessness in your mind. It is like this. If you live in a room with closed doors, the sun will not penetrate. Although opening the door is not creating the sun. By opening the door, you don't create the sun. The sun is there. But by opening the door, you become available to the sun. Meditations are just like opening the door. So right now, if you sit, you will be sitting in confusion. And the confusion will grow more and more if you sit. You will gather it. It will become almost impossible to bear it. And you will have to go to the movie, or to the radio, or the TV, or to the club. You will have to go somewhere. Meditations are cathartic. They throw all the rubbish that you contain inside. They simply cleanse you. They open the doors, they open the eyes. The sun is there. Once you are available, it starts penetrating you. Then you will never say that I became natural. You will say, I was natural. The problem was not how to become natural. The problem was how not to go on becoming unnatural. The fifth question, yesterday you said that there is no goal, no path, no one to lead and no one to follow. Is this statement a lie again? Were you kidding us yesterday? That's what I am doing every day. That's what is only possible to do. All statements are lies. truth remains unstated. Truth cannot be reduced to an statement. It cannot be reduced to a formula. It is vast. How can you reduce it to a statement? The moment you state anything about truth, the very expression becomes a barrier. Words cling around truth like chains. Truth can be transferred only in silence. So those who really listen to me, they don't listen to what I say. They listen to what I am. They listen to the gaps. They listen to the intervals. Words are not important, but there are small gaps between words. And the meeting between me and you happens in those gaps. Those gaps are of meditation. Slowly, slowly words move on the periphery, and my meeting, my communion with you becomes the central phenomenon. Words are there just distant on the periphery. Silence starts happening. If you fall silent listening to me, then you have listened to me. If listening to me, your mind stops. And there are moments when there are no thoughts. All is still and quiet. Then you have been listening to me. Hearing to me is one thing, listening to me is quite another. Those who come near to me for the first time, they hear. And those who stay with me for a longer time, slowly, slowly the transformation happens. Hearing starts changing into listening. Listening is non-verbal. Then my presence is listened. Then something is bridged between me and you. Then my heart and your heart start beating together in one rhythm. Then it is a song, a dance of energies. This is what is called in the East Satsanga, to be in the presence of the Master. It is not a verbal communication at all. Then why I go on speaking? Why can't I sit silently here? That much silence you will not be able to absorb. You can absorb it only in homeopathic doses. Only once in a while. And my words help. They don't state the truth, but they help. They indicate. They are fingers pointing to the moon. They are not moon themselves. Just fingers pointing to the moon. Arrows. Don't be obsessed by the fingers. Don't start clinging to the fingers. Don't start worshipping the fingers. Because that is how you will miss the moon. Forget the fingers and look at the moon. That moon is silence. Utter silence. Where not even a single word has ever been uttered. You have that space inside you. I have become one with it. You are not one with it. But once in a while, moving with me, flowing with me, hearing to my words, listening to my silences, once in a while it happens. And those moments are of grace. In those moments you have the first taste of God. Slowly, slowly, you will become more and more capable. That's why I go on speaking. and then new people are always coming. For them I have to speak. For the older ones, slowly, slowly, they will not be bothered by my words. Hearing will disappear completely. They will listen to my words just as they listen to the sound of a waterfall. They will not search for any meaning in them. They will not search for any truth in them. They will not search even for any coherence in them. They will not be constantly looking into consistency, contradiction, logic, illogic. No, all these things by and by disappear. They will listen to my words as they listen to the songs of the birds or the wind passing through the pine trees. You don't ask what is the meaning. You simply listen. And in that listening, you become that sound passing through the pine trees. You become that wind. Whatsoever I say is a device, so it is a lie. Truth has never been said, cannot be said. Truth is unutterable. But you can listen it. It is unutterable. It can't be said, but it can be listened. Let me repeat, it cannot be uttered, but it can be listened. You can catch hold of it in silence, in love, in communion. I am not able to say it, but you are able to listen it. Hence this device of talking to you every morning, ear in, ear out. This is just a waterfall. Listen to it. Don't just remain hearing. And I am so contradictory by arrangement. I manage it. Because if I am very consistent, you will never be able to listen to me. You will go on hearing me. I am so contradictory, sooner or later you are tired. You say, what is the point? Because this man is going to say one thing this morning and tomorrow he is going to contradict it. Seeing it again and again happening, you will cling to my statement and then tomorrow I contradict it. I have to contradict it. Whenever I see that somebody is clinging somewhere with my any statement, I have to contradict it immediately to relieve him of the burden, to relieve him of his clinging, to relieve him of the words that he has accumulated inside himself. So I will go on zigzag contradicting myself 1001 times. Slowly, slowly, the understanding dawns on you that there is no point to cling with any words of this man. There is no need to bother what he says. But by that time, you have fallen in love with me. By that time, you are in a totally different kind of relationship with me than you have ever been with anybody else. By that time, you have started enjoying my presence. By that time you have started imbibing me. By that time you have started feeling the nourishment. Now you don't care what I say. Now you care more that I am. Then listening has started. And you will understand me only by listening. You will understand me only when you have forgotten all about understanding what I am saying.
all statements are lies. Lao Tzu is true. He says, Tao cannot be said. And the moment you say it, you have betrayed it. He is absolutely true. Truth is so infinite and words are so finite. Only when you have something infinite in you, silence is infinite, unbounded. It can contain truth. Love is infinite, unbounded. It can contain truth. Trust is infinite, unbounded. It can contain truth. Be natural, spontaneous here with me. Be in the moment, as if all time and space has disappeared, as if the whole world has stopped, the mind has stopped, and suddenly there is truth in all its radiance, grandeur, splendor. It is here, right this moment. If you have ears, hear it. If you have eyes, see it. And if you cannot see it, and if you cannot hear it, then don't go on clinging unnecessarily here. I'm in a hurry. I don't want any weeds here. I will find every possible means and ways to drop people who are just sitting there like rocks. Either throb with me or get lost. Either be with me or don't be here. Because I mean to do business. The last question. I see I don't trust life 100%. Nothing feels possible unless I do. There are moments when trust happens, but what am I supposed to do at other times when I don't feel it? Pretending trust seems even worse. Living in fear feels no good either. Rupa, that's how we go on creating new goals. I go on taking goals from you and you go on creating new goals. Now, 100% trust. Now that becomes the goal. 99% and you are worried. Can't you simply be as you are? Why bother about 100% trust? Trying to be 100% when you are not is bound to create hypocrisy. You will become artificial. You will become unnatural. And do you know what 100% trust means? 100% trust means trusting even in your mistrust. That's what 100% trust means. If there is a moment of untrust, you trust that moment too. What can you do? One moment you trust me, good. Another moment you don't trust me, good. This is 100% trust. When all is good, it is 100% trust. Now you are again trying to create trouble and anxiety for yourself. One moment you trust me, good. You feel very good. Then another moment comes distrust. Now you are worried. Now somehow you have to change this distrust into trust. Now you are again starting a new ladder. Now you will compare, somebody has 100% trust, this moment never comes to him. And somebody has even less trust than me, and you are becoming part of hierarchy. You have started comparing. And you are creating ambition and fever. And when it will not happen, what you are going to do? And anything done by you will be unnatural. So you will become artificial. When it is not there, you will pretend. You will at least believe that it is there. At least on the surface. You will become afraid of going deep into yourself, because if you go deep into yourself, you will know that it is not there. 100% trust means accept life whatsoever it brings. Trust, mistrust, love, hate, God, devil, good, bad. You don't try to change anything. Don't try to correct anything. Be in a let go. That is 100% trust. And let me remind you again, otherwise next day, Rupa will be here, that I can allow let go sometimes. But sometimes it doesn't happen. The let go is not 100%. Let go again means the same. When it happens, it happens. When it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. You are not supposed to do a thing. Do anything and you become artificial. And people have become so artificial. It is very rare to see even a small part in a person which is not artificial. And it has all happened, this calamity has happened, because you are such a great improver. Continuously improving upon yourself, correcting and correcting. From your very childhood, your parents were correcting you. Then your teachers were correcting you. Then your professors were correcting you. Your priests were correcting you. The whole society has just been correcting you. And naturally, after 25 years of correction by everybody, you become yourself a great corrector. Then you start correcting yourself. In fact, you are allowed to leave the university only when you start doing the work of the parents and the teachers and the professors and the priest on your own. Then they allow. Then they say, right, now there is no danger. This man will do whatsoever we were doing and will do far more better, because he will know from the inside. He will know the inside story. Have you not observed it? Sometimes doing something, suddenly you hear your mother's voice, don't do it. If you have not heard it, try to hear and you will find your mother is still saying, don't do it. Actually, your mother's voice you can hear. Or your father saying that this is wrong. This is not the way to do the thing. Correct it. Or your teachers correcting. They have created such a rift in you that you have become two. This whole society exists in a kind of schizophrenia. Every person is split. This society has tried the trick of divide and rule. It has divided every person into two. The corrector and the one who has to be corrected. So everybody has become like a small student and the headmaster. Both are there. And the headmaster with the cane, shouting and threatening, and the small child always being corrected. And of course, the small child also takes revenge. Whenever the headmaster is not looking at the child, it does something. At least it can show his tongue. Or laugh, or joke. Or there are moments when the small child will take possession of you and will force you to do something that you never wanted to do and will make you repent. It always says, yes, sir, but it never means. It says, because I am afraid, I am saying yes, but I will show to you. This constant conflict goes on within you. And then everything becomes false, pseudo, phony. I have heard, groom, would you be very annoyed with me if I confess that all my upper teeth are false? Bride, not at all, darling. At least I can now relax and take off my wig, inflatable bra, glass eye, and artificial leg. Now what is left? Just watch what you are carrying around yourself, what you think is your personality. What is it? An American tourist visiting England had just enjoyed a delicious dinner in a Winchester restaurant. Would you like coffee, sir? Inquired a waiter. Certainly, replied the American. Cream or milk? Neither, said the American firmly. Just give me what I am used to back home. A pasteurized blend of water, corn syrup solids, vegetable oil, sodium caseinate, carrageenan, guar gum, disodium phosphate, polysorbate 60, sorbitan, monosodium potassium sorbate, and artificial color. Now what is left? Slowly, slowly, everything becomes false, artificial, synthetic, plastic. Then you lose the taste of life. And when you lose the taste of life, you lose contact with God. When you become inauthentic, you become uprooted. Please, don't try anything upon yourself. Stop trying. Let things be. Let things be as they are. They are utterly beautiful. All ugliness is created by you. Yes, sometimes mistrust is perfectly beautiful. Sometimes doubt is good. It protects from many foolishnesses. It protects you from gullibility. Sometimes trust is good, sometimes no trust is good. But whatsoever the case, this I call 100% trust, that you always say good. So this is the thing in this moment. So this moment God wants me to be trustful, and this moment God wants me to be doubtful. Leave it to God. And you simply be at the receptive end. A receptacle. And you will be surprised. Life will start happening to you, and God will start happening to you. But we are trained very deep down from the childhood to be false, to be untrue, to be formal. An Englishman and her young son were traveling in a taxi in New York. As the taxi passed a particularly seedy part of the city, the small boy was fascinated by the garishly made-up ladies who were walking along the streets, accosting some of the male passers-by. "What are those ladies doing?" asked the boy. His mother blushed and said, somewhat embarrassed, "I expect they are lost and are asking people for directions." The taxi driver overheard this and said in a loud voice, "Why don't you tell the boy the truth? In other words, they are prostitutes." The woman blushed even deeper red, and her son asked, "What are prostitutes?" What the driver said, "Are they like other women? Do they have children?" "Of course," replied the mother. "That is where New York taxi drivers come from." Truth is not accepted anywhere. People are annoyed with truth. False pretensions are very much acceptable. We have lived in lies so long that truth simply annoys. It is not just an accident that Socrates is poisoned. His only sin was that he was trying to make people aware of the truth. His sin was nothing else. He was a simple, innocent man. Harmless, utterly harmless. He has not harmed anybody in any way. But still, Athens was angry. Why they were angry? He was trying to make people feel uneasy about their lies. He was trying to force them to see the truth. Whosoever tries to make you aware of the truth is going to be thought an enemy by the society. The society lives in lies. It depends on lies. I am here not to help in your lies. I can't say to you that be 100% in trust. Not at least the way you mean by 100%. Then what will happen to those moments when you can't trust? What you will do? You will simply cover them up. You will pretend that they are not there. You will throw them into the unconscious in the basement of your being and will never look there. And they will accumulate there and one day they will explode. No, that is not to be done. When untrust comes, allow it to come and know that it is there. Accept it. It must have some meaning. If it is there, it must have some meaning. It is like a thorn in the rose bush. All are not roses, few thorns are there. They protect the roses. There must be some deep harmony between the thorn and the rose. So is there between trust and untrust. Accept the harmony of polarities. This I call 100% trust from my side. Trust everything that happens. Mistrust is included. Doubt is included. Nothing is excluded. I teach you totality in life. And sometimes when you are not total, that too is included in totality. Accept that too. And this will be a liberation. Then there will be no more creation of chains, no more creation of lies, no more repressions. And a man who is not repressed is bound to have the glimpse of the real man. And one glimpse of the real man, an Iku is right. You are in love. Enough for today.